Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, it's an acquisition extravaganza. Flipboard's buying Zeit, Yahoo's buying Visify, Twitter can detect diseases. What else is going to happen? You got to watch. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 152, recorded Thursday, March 6th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of five stylish frames of your choice, plus free three-day shipping on your final frame purchase, go to warbyparker.com/socialhour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/socialhour to receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm still in Toronto, but I'm at a conference called DX3, and I've been shooting some stuff here all day, and I am doing the show from the conference floor, and it's kind of a different venue, Sarah, but I think it's going to work out okay.
Yeah, I've actually seen some pictures that you've tweeted and other people have tweeted from around the conference. What's the focus?
It's really a big digital conference for e-commerce companies, retailers, and there are tons of startups here, app developers, probably, I don't know how many people, but hundreds of people, about 100 exhibitors, and I'm kind of on a stage doing interviews for a TV show, but I just finished all of the interviews, so I'm all good. I'm all ready for the social hour.
All right. Well, let's just get started then. There was some big news yesterday that Flipboard, which we've talked about in the past, sort of a social news reader that is available for iOS, Android, it has decided to buy Zeit, which is kind of also a news reader, sort of a competitor, really. And what's interesting about this is Zeit was independent a couple of years ago in 2011, was bought by CNN, which was very interesting because we all thought, oh, okay, so we've got sort of the old guard of broadcasting interested in the new way of consuming news. This social, you tell Zeit, well, I can even open it up right now. You tell Zeit the sorts of articles that you're interested in, and then you get those sorts of articles in the future and certain categories like that. But it didn't seem to work out all that well because CNN clearly couldn't make use of it. And now Flipboard, which has more users than Zeit anyway, is buying it, which leads most people to believe that it's about some sort of technology that Zeit has behind the scenes that the Flipboard folks feel that they can use. Sounds like the deal was somewhere under $20 million. But it's interesting, Amber, that this is such a... It was a way of consuming news that was very exciting to me, but we're already seeing some consolidation, which is, I don't know what it means for the future of this format.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I don't think we've ever before really seen a large company who is in the broadcast space like CNN selling a piece of technology. I think that's where it gets kind of interesting. So I was just reading the article. I think they updated it saying the deal could be valued as high as $60 million over time. And I guess it makes sense for Flipboard, but I do wonder in the background, you know, is this something maybe they would just shut down because they saw it as a competitor, or do they want their technology, like you had said, Sarah? I mean, it's hard to figure out at this point exactly what they're going to do with it. But I think it also shows us how almost upside down the world of media and technology is today when you have someone like CNN selling something like this to Flipboard for this much money. I mean, what's going to happen next, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, as far as acquisitions go, also yesterday there was some news that Yahoo had bought Visify, which is particularly interesting because I've always thought of Visify as a way to make, oh, let's say a tweet stream or a conversation of tweets look nice and visual. Now, it's not just for Twitter. It's basically, in fact, I've got Visify up here. It's sort of a way to show social media as kind of a, you know, not just infographic, but something that's a lot more visual. And it really is a tool that's used by news journalists and organizations and helps sort of put into context maybe what a keyword is doing online and maybe there's some trending topics and that sort of thing. What Yahoo wants to do with Visify, I'm not sure yet. It's a really nice product. Unfortunately, if you go to Visify.com, they just have a nice little notice there that says, we've been acquired by Yahoo. Here's the announcement. That's the end of that. It sounds like Visify no longer is accepting new users and is going to be shut down and somehow folded into Yahoo. Amber, what's your best guess on how the technology will be used?
You know, I really think in some ways that Yahoo needs a bigger footprint in the social space, right? Although they do have different technology tools and software, at the end of the day, I don't think I see them really as a company that continues to be strong in social. I mean, we've seen companies out there like Facebook and other businesses far surpass them. And in that sense, I think Yahoo seems a little bit dated. So I think this gives them a bit of a social footprint. I also think it's interesting when we're talking about acquisitions, Sarah, that in this article, they talk about this being the 37th acquisition for Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer since she took over in July of 2012. Amazing, right?
That's crazy. I mean, I know Google and Apple and Facebook certainly are in the headlines all the time for also acquiring smaller companies, but Yahoo seems to acquire, it's got to be like on average a couple companies a week. It's sort of staggering. What's weird, though, is that, and I know that there's some of the stuff is a little bit like of a long view on where Yahoo was planning to be in 5 years. But a lot of these companies, we just haven't seen the fruits of these acquisitions at all. We're still in this period where we say, Marissa Mayer, what's it going to look like? What's the next Yahoo? And we don't see that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the times it really is a talent acquisition, right? You know, at the bottom of this article, they also mentioned that the 5-person team at Visify will join the team at Yahoo. And it does seem like she, even though they may need this footprint in social, they also need to be able to encourage more talent to come their way. And this allows them to have people who obviously have great expertise in the visualization space to come and work for Yahoo in San Francisco. So it seems to me like it's a bit of both. I was surprised, though, to see that number of 37 acquisitions over the past couple of years. Just an absolutely massive number. And I think you're right. You know, we don't really see Yahoo take these companies and do anything that revolutionary with the companies, but they just seem to love to be able to absorb the talent into what they're currently doing today.
Well, you know, Amber, you're at a conference now, another conference that is getting underway. Officially tomorrow is South by Southwest, at least the interactive portion, which is historically the place where people who are geeks and in the tech space and social space meet and have a grand old time. I will not be going this year, but I'm certainly interested in what's happening there from afar. And Foursquare, the check-in social network, has been one of those services that you always hear about as a great example of something that blew up at South by Southwest. It was back in 2008, I think. And since then, It's been a interesting and sometimes confusing ride with where Foursquare is going. There is less emphasis on checking into a place and finding out where your friends are checked into and more about exploring new places and getting recommendations based on kind of the wider set of data that Foursquare has collected over the years, which is a lot. There was a great interview over at CNBC with Dennis Crowley, who's the CEO of Foursquare. And, you know, a lot of people have said over the last, I would say a couple of years, but certainly a year, is Foursquare about to get acquired? They've got deals with these companies, but where is it all going? Who's using Foursquare anymore? I happen to still be a daily user of Foursquare because I like to be the mayor of my coffee shop down the street. But but I know a lot of people have kind of forgotten about that part of it. But some interesting numbers. Foursquare averages 6 million check-ins each day. Crowley says that revenues grew 500% in the first quarter of 2014, 600% in all of 2013. So it's interesting that even though some of us are still scratching our heads as to what Foursquare is now, they continue to not only gain new users and have a lot of daily engagement, but they're bringing in money, revenue.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Foursquare has lost a bit of that buzz that they had at one point, right? I mean, it just seems like it's gone a bit downhill. And I can't help but wonder, with the rise of visual social media, and we've talked so much about this on the Social Hour with Pinterest and Instagram and all of these other tools. And then, of course, messaging apps are really hot right now. The whole check-in process, to me, seems, again, you know, maybe just not that current and exciting for people. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but even among some of my friends, I find them using Foursquare way less. I mean, I just don't see it even in my Twitter stream like I used to, where people would post from Foursquare and then cross-post over to Twitter. I just feel like adoption has dropped off, despite the fact that he's gone on to say this. Seems a little defensive to me, I would say.
It does, but the numbers do seem good. It sounds like App Annie, which is collects data certainly about apps and install numbers and that sort of thing. It sounds like Foursquare is on a slight downward trend. Currently, it has around 45 million users, active users, which is probably something around who uses it within 30 days. But it's huge. It's sort of this huge network that has so much data that companies are interested in, yet it's not selling, and it keeps. Pivot is not the right word. It keeps evolving into more of really almost like a B2B type of an app. And I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. But I can't imagine that many people are going to be checking into places down in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest anymore.
Yeah, I know. I think we'll see a lot more companies getting a lot more buzz out of South by Southwest. Incidentally, Sarah, when is the last time you were at South by Southwest?
It was 2 years ago. I skipped last year, and I felt really weird about it because I had been there for 7 years, and I really didn't miss anything. You know, there's a party here and there, and people say that they had a good time, and you kind of go, oh, it would have been nice to have a taco at Torchy's or something like that, but I'm not exactly sure what it's for anymore. The talks are still really interesting, but more than ever, I know that my peers don't even bother to get badges because it's like, oh, it's just about, you know, the parties outside of the conference center. And when it starts becoming that sort of thing, I think, well, you can do that at home. I mean, how many people are you really planning to see in Austin that you don't see the rest of the year, where it makes it worth it to go there and be part of kind of this big marketing machine? Because I do feel that it's turned into that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking to a couple of people at this conference who are heading down to South by Southwest, and it's interesting because I do find a lot of people are going there to speak. I mean, it almost seems to be like a credential if you can get a place on a panel there, and maybe you talk about your product or whatever you're doing, and it seems to be more revolving around some of the panels and the sessions, but it doesn't seem to me, it doesn't feel like a place where you're going to have those breakouts that we saw years ago of these apps that launched, like Foursquare, that they got a ton of buzz. I just don't think we've had as many of those stories over the past couple of years, but instead it's more of like a meeting place for ideas, which I think is still okay, but it has lost a bit of that cachet, at least for me. Like you, I haven't been there for years, actually, but I can't see myself really getting back on that train.
Yeah, we've got other options now, and you're right. There isn't that. There are just so many apps. You know, Foursquare, that was 2008. I mean, the idea of apps, mobile apps, where there just weren't that many of them yet, or not really popular ones. There was Twitter in 2007, and now it's 2014, and it's like, what's going to be the big app of South by Southwest? I hear people keep talking about Secret, which is, of course, that app where you anonymously talk smack about people, or yourself, or, you know, but it's like, it doesn't work anymore. At least in this sort of viral way where you use South By as this breeding ground for new users.
Yeah, and I also think there was a point with South by Southwest where all of the big influencers in the social media space were there, right? And you had to depend on them to be able to spread the word about some of the products that you were launching there. And that was really critical if you were going to get that that fast rate of adoption. But I think we've seen pockets of influencers not have to be part of the South by Southwest community. I mean, you know, there are cities all across Canada, the U.S., all around the world, where I think people can, in fact, get the word out to their own little community. So it just doesn't feel like it has to be as centralized anymore. So you don't have to be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, maybe after the long weekend by Tuesday, when I think Interactive officially, I think it officially ends on Monday. Maybe I'll be sorry that I wasn't there, but I don't think so. I don't think so. No. I also checked flights last night. Last minute flights for the weekend are like $2,500 from San Francisco. So that's not happening.
Yeah, no, it's very expensive. Now, this is a really interesting article, Sarah, and I wonder if this is kind of the future of how researchers are able to figure out if there are certain health crises in certain areas. A team of UCLA researchers just discovered, based on their research on Twitter, using real-time social media, that they tracked HIV outbreaks and drug behavior, and they basically tried to figure out where there were pockets of individuals who were suffering from HIV, and they were doing this in real time, really just based on conversations people were having on Twitter. So they looked up, they followed along with phrases such as getting high and having sex, and they plotted the tweets on a map and then ran a model against this to check if the locations matched where HIV cases had been reported.
Wow.
Wow, right? I mean, whoever thought that Twitter would be used in this way? I mean, it's something almost unimaginable.
Well, it's not like a flu outbreak at all, but it kind of reminds me of these stories that you hear of where scientists can follow keywords of people saying, you know, going to the doctor, or I have a temperature, or there are certain indicators of, ooh, it looks like the flu might be spreading through a certain region, which is not the same as this, but it goes to show you that when you have that much data coming in from all over the world, people do tend to use similar statements about things, and you can start to see patterns about all sorts of outbreaks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as though they just analyzed tweets for a day. In fact, they analyzed more than 550 million tweets, according to this Mashable article, between May 26th and December 9th of 2012. So it was a significant amount of time, a significant amount of tweets. And I think this is just one example. When we think of healthcare, this is just one example of how people are able to take big data and decipher information out of it just like this. So very interesting. And I know you mentioned Google Flu Trends, which is also mentioned in this particular article. So I'm always fascinated when they can take anything on social media sites and conversations that are happening, and they're able to map it against something like this. So it's an interesting study, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this take place in the future.
What I would like to see a lot more of are hoverboards, Amber, but it turns out that I might be waiting a while.
I know. I saw a bunch of people tweet me this, and they also sent out links on Facebook. This was this hoverboard video that was all over the internet, went viral over the past couple of days. I even had someone tweet at me and say, hey, you know, we should definitely take a look at this product. And it was almost too good to be true, although it featured professional skater Tony Hawk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where some people got kind of excited that perhaps it was the real deal, that Tony Hawk was finally launching a hoverboard for all of us to enjoy. And as much as we wanted to believe that this was true, it is not. It turns out that this particular video of people using the hoverboard is a spoof, and it's a spoof that was basically created by Funny or Die.
Is that who created it? I was wondering when we would find out who was behind that. I actually read an article the other day where somebody was saying, is it a new Jimmy Kimmel skit? Is it, is it something for GoPro? Because they're always accused of making up videos as well. Funny or Die, huh? Well, you know, good for them, because you could sort of tell by the video that everybody was a little too amped up, a little too animated, and you could just sort of like, you could smell that something was fishy, plus a hoverboard. Come on. I mean, I know tech has come a long way, but that's not happening. But I did see a lot of my friends duped as well, Amber. People were, because they were saying, ooh, celebrities are involved in this. I mean, these are like Schoolboy Q. He's one of my favorite new rappers. That's pretty cool. Wow. I mean, he wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't real, right? Oh, well.
But see, people want to believe, and I don't know if there's an official term for that, but I do think people want to believe in stuff like this. I mean, everybody wants to believe there is a hoverboard out there, and so they start to spread stories about this, and all of the geeky people think this is amazing will be so enthralled and excited about it. And I think we just share too quickly, right, in the social space. We've seen this more and more. We're doing less research. I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know if this is in fact true, if there were news organizations that picked up on this. And it's almost, it's almost too easy today, Sarah, I think, to be able to spoof people because we want to believe that some cool stuff like this does in fact exist.
I also want to know how they made it look so realistic.
I know.
I mean, sure, it's a spoof, but you watch that video and it's like there's really nothing obviously holding them up. How'd they do it?
I know. It's absolutely fascinating. So, hey, if there are more spoofs, please let us know firsthand because I don't want to be spreading anything. Because I almost spread that, Sarah. I have to tell you, I looked at it and then I was thinking, I don't know, this just seems too good to be true. And I held off. And,
oh, yeah. The first I heard of it was from a friend of mine who was like, I'm so excited. I don't know how much this costs, but I really want one. And she wasn't kidding. She was like really excited to get a hoverboard.
I know.
Oh, well.
Too funny.
We all get spoofed every once in a while. All right, well, a quick reminder, Amber and I are live on Thursdays. If you're watching us live, you already know this. But if you're not and you would like to watch us live in the future, Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's a lot of fun to watch us live. You can watch all of the, well, I was going to say shenanigans, but really, it's not like that. It's too different than the finished product, but... But there is something fun about chatting live. We've got the chat room going. We've got tweets coming in, giving us real-time feedback. So do watch us live if you can at live.twit.tv. And if you want to give us feedback, our email address is thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, we've got some tips. We've got some spotlights, even some more news. But first, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Here are some of the reasons that you will love Squarespace. In fact, I've been tinkering in Squarespace quite a bit lately because I'm redoing my SarahLean.com blog and I'm trying to figure out which Squarespace template I like the best. And that is almost a tough decision because they're all really, really nice. They have beautiful designs. They have 25 really nice templates just to start with, just to import some of your, you know, maybe you have a blog somewhere else, or maybe you're starting from scratch. Either way, you can get your content in with a template and just use that as a baseline or never really change it at all. Either way, it'll look really, really lovely. Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day. They have always, without fail, gotten back to me within an hour when I use a little support ticket feature. So if I'm in the middle of a project, I don't have to worry about, oh, gosh, you know, I'm not going to hear from somebody until tomorrow. That really makes a difference. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a redesigned customer help site. So you have easier access to help articles and video workshops. I had some DNS issues, and I actually watched a video tutorial where Squarespace walked me through it, and that was really helpful as well because, hey, these sorts of things sometimes do happen. It's also inexpensive. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year, and this is hosting too. So this is an all-in-one package. This isn't just, oh, a place to start a website. This is a place to make a beautiful website, host that beautiful website, have tech support built in, and even that domain name as well. Plus, it's mobile ready. The new Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad will allow you to check site stats, page views, who your unique visitors are, where they come from, social media follows, all that stuff. And the code is really, really beautiful. It's fun to use. It looks nice. And again, that hosting is included. So you really can't go wrong. Starting at $8 a month, an amazingly good deal for something that looks as good as Squarespace does. You can start a free 2-week trial, no credit card required, and start building your website right now. When you decide to sign up, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR to get 10% off and to show your support for The Social Hour. We thank Squarespace for their support of The Social Hour. A better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. And by the way, if anyone wants to go to SarahLean.com and tell me what I should do, because it's kind of bare bones right now, please do. It's nice. I've got some work to do, but, you know, that's my little baseline.
We just need some pictures of you on the homepage, Sarah.
I know. I can't find any that I like. You would think that that wouldn't be a problem that I have, but I don't know. I get sick of myself.
It's hard to find them. I totally understand.
Yeah.
All right, so this is an interesting article that just went live in the past 24 hours about Kickstarter hitting $1 billion in pledges, and that's a pretty significant number as far as people giving money over for individuals to develop certain products, as entrepreneurs are looking to finance pet projects, and that range from many different things. In this article, they mention everything from Oculus Rift, the gaming headset, to Veronica Mars, the movie. And I think this is a pretty important milestone, Sarah, because I just interviewed someone recently in the past day here who had used a crowdfunding site to start her business. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, not only did she get thousands and thousands of dollars from individuals, but she also got a couple of orders from some of the biggest retailers in both Canada and the U.S. So for the individuals who aren't able to go and get money from venture capitalists, this just gives them such a phenomenal opportunity. So a billion-dollar mark is an amazing milestone.
It's kind of fun. At Kickstarter.com, they even tout these crazy numbers and, you know, sort of a hey, we didn't realize that it would ever be this popular as well. They've got kind of a fun little OMG page here saying $1 billion pledged by 5.7 million people to creative projects. More than half was pledged in the last 12 months, which just goes to show you that the Kickstarter name has just kind of become synonymous with raising money effectively. Of course, not every Kickstarter project reaches its goal, but the ones that do, as you mentioned, Amber, are really high profile hardware and projects and entertainment. It's kind of amazing. However, 5.7 million people who've backed a Kickstarter project come from 224 countries, all seven continents. They profile some of these, you may have heard of Neil Gaiman, for example, some of these high-profile folks who have either been involved in starting Kickstarter projects and hoping for donations, and people who have contributed to them. It's neat. This is a kind of fun little infographic page just on its own, just to give you a sense of scale. All of these folks who are involved in Kickstarter And we were talking around Twit the other day that it's like Kickstarter is almost like the Kleenex of crowdfunding, you know, meaning it's this word that we understand, even if you're talking about another crowdfunding site. There's Indiegogo, there's,
Rocket Hub, CrowdRise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they all do their own thing, but the term Kickstarter, people go, oh, yeah, I know what that means. That's when you ask, you know, people to help you achieve some sort of a goal, and then they get a little fun something in return for helping you achieve that. So good for Kickstarter.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
It's pretty amazing.
I love also reading little stats like this, because even though I've never hosted a Kickstarter campaign, it's fun to read things like Wednesday is the day of the week when backers have pledged the most money, while pledges usually drop off on weekends. And I think there's a lot of people who are launching crowdfunding campaigns who really get into the science of how you can be successful, because I think we all know that you need a stellar video, right? Like, many of the campaigns that have been able to raise the most money have some type of really slick video. They've really solidified their brand as well. And to be able to get more information like Kickstarter has available about the days of the week where people want to pledge more money, I think that also becomes a really great tool for people who want to go there as an option to build a product. So it's an interesting time for entrepreneurs.
This is the best. I mean, kudos to the Kickstarter team for putting together this amazing page. I mean, they're literally breaking down at this point. It's like, so what does $1 billion really mean? Well, it's like LeBron James's current contract for 50 years, or 44,555 RoboCop statues, or one Instagram, you know, a billion, or 1.25 million iPhone 5Ss. It's great. They've outdone themselves.
That is awesome. I love it.
Oh, I love it too. Oh, that's good stuff. All right, let's move on now to a social tip, and this is about Getty Images, who it sounds like they're kind of trying to change the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think Getty Images historically has been one of those companies that's really clamped down on being able to allow people to use their images. Obviously, they've encouraged people to pay for any images they have there. They've made a great business out of that. But they're loosening up a bit based on how social media has continued to grow and realize that maybe there is an opportunity for them to allow bloggers and writers online to use some of their images in their articles. So they've also offered this tool that allows you to embed photos from their photo library completely for free. Obviously, they will have a little Getty Image credit there, and just makes an interesting case for, I think, individuals to use their images because they have more than 150 million, and it's really kind of a left turn for them, but I do think it makes sense.
Yeah, I do too. It's interesting because I suppose Getty Images had sort of come to the end of all of the organizations and individuals. Well, not come to the end, but had seen some sort of a slowing of the model. Probably most of the people who were going to use Getty Images for a fee were already. So in order for them to say, all right, well, we're now going to have this whole free tier for everybody. I mean, that not only gets the word out, but it kind of, Getty Images is a little bit like Kickstarter, where you sort of go, oh yeah, I understand that there are other image databases, but Getty's is perhaps the biggest, or at least the most well-known, or one of them anyway. But still, on the average, there are a lot of people who say, well, if I wanted a free picture, where would I go? Would I go to Flickr, you know, and look for a Creative Commons license? I think that really, it gets Getty out into a whole nother part of the potential population and user base, which then, if you end up using free images from Getty for, I don't know, the next year, and then all of a sudden there's a paid tier that sounds really attractive to you, then you're likely to pay where you might not have been in the first place.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, one thing they also mentioned is think about how people traditionally would go to a news site and right-click on an image that could have been a Getty image, and then they would use it on their blog post anyway, right?
Yeah.
They would never go through the proper steps to buy that image, and then Getty would never get credit for that image. So it almost seems like one of those situations where, wow, why didn't they think of this before? I just interviewed some of actually one of the founders from 500 Pixels. Sarah, are you familiar with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Photography site? Mm-hmm. And he was mentioning they actually just launched a tool like this as well. So it seems like a lot of the photography companies are getting into this game where they know that people are just kind of borrowing or stealing images anyway, so they may as well get some credit for it in the process. So I think this is a good move, and I think that it allows anyone writing online or posting images to be able to have better quality photos, right? You're not just scraping them from another website.
Yeah, there's an interesting little debate going on in our chat room right now because some people are saying, well, this is smart of Getty because fighting piracy is kind of a waste of time and money. They're if you can't beat them, join them type of a thing. Kirok says, exposure is great for Getty, usage is great for bloggers. The only loser is the actual photographer. And then Beatmaster says, Getty's smart, as in they don't want to criminalize a potentially huge user base. And that was kind of the point that I was making. Yeah, as far as being the photographer goes, I'm sure that there are people who, you know, on both sides of the spectrum and everywhere in between, as it always is with services that will allow at least a limited use of free stuff. When you're the photographer, obviously, you want your work to be appreciated and you want credit and, in many cases, as much money as possible. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any sort of a backlash from the photography community that such a big database of photos now is changing its model.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize this either, and I was just talking to, like I mentioned, the founder from 500 Pixels, who said that photographers get, I think, 30% or something along those lines of revenue from Getty Images that are sold. 500 Pixels also has the same thing that they're offering up for professional photographers, and they're giving, I think, it's 70% of the revenue to photographers. So I think we're also going to see a bit of a battle happening there, too, that photographers need to be able to generate more income because we know it's such a tough business online. So it'll be fun to watch that heat up over the next few months.
It will indeed. Speaking of heating up, but sort of like a comeback. I remember back in May 2013, I think that's when it was, and this was a service that you and I have talked about in the past, Amber, Trippy, which is sort of a social network that helps people sort of help each other figure out the perfect next vacation, next destination was shutting down. And I thought, oh, that's a bummer. But, you know, these things happen. It was a great idea. There's a lot of competition in the travel space. Maybe it just wasn't a great call. Well, in my email this morning, I got some sort of a notice from the folks at Trippi saying, hey, we got a new product. It's really awesome. We'd love to have you try it out. And I went ahead and went to Trippi.com, and Trippi is certainly alive and well. This is me. I'm logged in, and I had earlier today, I'm sort of tentatively trying to put together a trip to Iceland later this year for myself. Yeah, so I added Iceland into places that I would like to visit, and it's kind of cool. Already, because I said that I would be interested in going to the capital, to Reykjavik, I've got these, little tips from people who have been, who have tips on the cheapest way to get there, the things that I'm supposed to see when I'm supposed to be there. Other questions from others. In fact, Juan C. said, to appreciate the country's natural attractions, when's the best period of year that you recommend to visit Iceland? See, that's exactly the question that I have, because I don't want to go when it's too dark or too cold or I miss all the good stuff. And then you can see that people have answered. Now, this is not unlike something like TripAdvisor, where there's people who are querying certain places or destinations and other people who are answering them. It is laid out very nicely, though. You can go ahead, and there's a little bit of like that dig or the voting up type of functionality here. And this is kind of nice. Now, of course, I could go ahead and say, okay, let's look at some pro tips here. What is Trippi so good for here? And they say, it's kind of neat. They have a concept that they like to call shoes by the door. When you walk into somebody's house and see shoes by the door, you know to take off your shoes. Then it says, I'm leaving my shoes by the door to show all future members how to use Trippi. And then it's got some kind of interesting here's how you use the site as good as possible. This is all travel-based now, of course, so you have to be interested in the idea of travel, but it's very visual. If I go ahead and search, Provence, region in France, I can go ahead and, again, I can look at pictures and tips and all sorts of good stuff from other users. So Trippi, as far as a database of information about places around the world that I've either been or like to go, I'm glad it's alive and well.
That's good news. Yeah, I still know a lot of people use Trippi, and I'm not sure if he uses it on a regular basis, but I know, I think Johnny Jett first introduced me to Trippi a while ago, so I think it is something he may still use, too, so it's nice to hear that they're still around. You worried me a bit, Sarah. I thought you were going to say they had gone.
They had gone away. Yeah, no, it's great. It's awesome. I love it. I believe Gary Vee also is somehow, I don't know if he's involved with them, maybe he's advising them, but I saw something from him this morning that Trippi was crushing it or something like that. So, some sort of Gary Vaynerchuk way of thumbsing up, of kudos. But yeah, so Trippi.com is the address if you would like to give it another look. Looks like they've figured it out. All right, before we get to some of our viewer feedback and a little bit more spotlighty stuff, let's take a moment to thank Warby Parker for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Warby Parker, as you might recall, makes awesome glasses, prescription glasses, sunglasses. What's nice about Warby Parker is they're very much on the forefront of style. All the Warby Parker shades, I mean, let's just look at these beautiful ladies and gentlemen on their homepage here. This is like stylish stuff, and you go, oh, well, that's nice and good and everything, but sunglasses alone, not even prescription, you're talking like $300 plus. The nice thing about Warby Parker is that they make stylish sunglasses and prescription glasses that start at $95, under $100 for awesome glasses that you're going to get complimented on, that are going to look good, that are made well. They all include anti-reflective and anti-clear coating, hard case, a cleaning cloth. It's very nice stuff. Now, you might be wondering, okay, well, glasses are nice, but I don't feel really comfortable buying glasses off the internet because sometimes you put them on and then you wish you would have tried them on because they don't really fit your face or they weren't really the style that you thought or the color was a little off. What's nice about Warby Parker, in fact, if you go to warbyparker.com/social hour, there's a little bit of a deal here. What you can do, you're wondering what's in here, you can choose 5 pairs of glasses. In fact, we've got 5 in here too. You can say, all right, well, you know, I'm kind of like that tortoise shell. The tortoise shell looks kind of promising, but ooh, I want to make a statement with some red frames. These are all sunglasses, but again, prescription is something that Warby Parker handles as well. What they will then do is you choose your 5, then they send them to you so that you can try all of them on, you know, in front of a mirror. Poll your friends. Hey, you know, does red work for me or does it not? Amber, I know you have a pair of red Warbies and they're awesome.
And I have a great story about Warby Parker. I had a friend come over just a couple of days ago and she was coming by for dinner and she's a big fan of House of Cards, like a huge fan of House of Cards on Netflix. And she loves Claire Underwood, who of course is Kevin Spacey's wife on the program.
Yeah.
And she loves her style. She's like, she's so stylish. So she went online and she was trying to buy Claire Underwood's glasses. She wanted the exact same glasses that Claire Underwood has. So she ended up researching and she discovered that the glasses that are most similar and look like them are from Warby Parker. In fact, I just put a link into the show notes, and they're the Beckett glasses from Warby Parker.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Great little trivia there.
So if you're a fan of
House of Cards and you want to check out Claire Underwood's glasses, you can check out the Beckett glasses. That's Beckett on Warby Parker, and they're minimalist style.
Love
them. And very slick, and you get a little bit of House of Cards at home.
Oh, I love that, because however you feel about Claire Underwood, if you're a House of Cards watcher, she is very stylish. I will give her that. She is nothing if not stylish. So yeah, you get these 5 frames, you figure out which one you like the best, you choose it, you know, you enter it online, you tell them your prescription info, if that's part of it, because you can do that for sunglasses as well. And then they will send you the frame of your choice, and you just pay for the one. So it's a try at home type of a thing, and it's a really, really nice service. I've never heard of anything like this by any other company except Warby Parker, because they want to go the extra mile to make sure that you get the frames that you really want. And of course, with prices starting at $95, maybe there's a few that you like. You know, you can have different styles for different days of the week and different outfits. Returns are fine within 30 days, so you've got some time. Warby Parker is confident enough that you're going to like their glasses that they definitely give you some leeway. So why not give Warby Parker a try? Stylish new prescription glasses or sunglasses. WarbyParker.com/social hour. Get the free home try on and then get 3-day free shipping on your final frame purchase. Yes, the social hour is the right URL there. WarbyParker.com/social hour. And thanks to Warby Parker for sponsoring us, because, you know, being stylish is certainly something that Amber and I are very good at. And it's a match made in heaven, isn't it?
I'm totally going to get the Claire Underwood glasses, though. I love them.
Exactly. Yeah,
they're simple.
They're very nice. Now, I want to pull up this amazing... Wait, are we getting there yet? Yeah, I guess so. Yes, okay. So we got an email from Michael who says... he's talking about Facebook Paper. Amber, we talked about this a few weeks ago when it launched.
Yes, yes.
This is Facebook's kind of reimagining of the news feed that's a little bit more simplified and in app form and pretty nice looking. Before we get to Michael's feedback, have you been using it beyond when we first kind of gave it a whirl?
I haven't really. You know, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I just find myself going to other websites beyond the Facebook experience to get my news. And I just, again, it becomes more of a quality issue for me. And maybe I should be following different people or publications on Facebook. But right now, it's not at the place that I feel like I'm consuming the most information. And maybe I'm the exception, because I'm sure people absolutely love paper and use it all the time.
You know, I'm looking at it right now, and it's what's nice about paper. Here, you can see this a little bit better. What's nice is that this is not only news articles that people are sharing, but just information in general. You know, I can see I've got a friend request, somebody's messaging me, you've got the nice little Facebook photo icon here. I see that my friend David Prager changed his profile picture. Good one. It's a nice photo. And then we've got Facebook looks different suddenly. That comes from Scott Johnson. I wonder what that means. Maybe they have got a new design on their main page. My friend Elle, who's an artist, has uploaded a new painting that she has painted. This is a Verge article that's obviously being shared by a lot of folks. I mean, I really do like the design a lot. I'm with you, Amber, where, quite honestly, I find that I'm not really using it all that often. But that's really not because this isn't a good product. It's because I have a lot of places to check for news. And this is just not necessarily that one go-to place. But maybe it should be.
I mean, if I just depended on Facebook for my news and use paper, for instance, I probably would just get stories about the hoverboard. I mean, that's the exact type of thing that I get in my newsfeed on Facebook. So, I mean, the type of articles I see, I mean, it just, again, they may be fun stuff and humorous stuff, but not necessarily the type of content that I want to be able to read and get educated from.
Yeah, it's true. I do like the idea that you can really customize the stuff that you're seeing. So I'm in my customize section here, and it's saying, well, what's the stuff that you're interested in? I picked exposure, that sort of photography stuff. Of course, cute, that's me. Tech, pop life, flavor. I can choose. Well, I guess I've gotten to the end there. But you know, planet, ideas, creators, score. Yeah, sure, sports. I'm interested in sports, at least enough to want to see more of them. So that's kind of nice, too. It's a lovely product. Anyway, all right, so let's get to this feedback from Michael, who says, I approach everything that Facebook does with a bit of skepticism and suspicion. I've been a Flipboard user, so when I heard about paper, I thought, yet another ripoff from Facebook. A ripoff of Flipboard. He says, but I nevertheless gave paper a chance, and I think it's a fantastic app. I use it now more than Flipboard. Flipboard seems cluttered compared to paper. And yes, I, a career journalist, even get news from it, in addition to keeping up with my friends' feed. Try not to let the Facebook brand cloud your judgment. Ask yourselves, if paper sprung from a company other than Facebook, would you come at it with greater criticism? Give it a chance. And then he says, I know several people outside the U.S., myself included, who are using paper now. We're in the expat community with addresses in the United States and able to download the app stores as if we're home. Well, I think that's actually an interesting way to think about it, that people stay away sometimes from good products if they don't like Facebook and don't want to be part of the Facebook universe, because this is definitely a Facebook product. It's not as if it's Facebook-owned like an Instagram, where you really don't ever see any Facebook branding inside the Instagram standalone app. I wonder how many people stay away from paper because they think, oh, it's just another way to read the newsfeed and I don't like Facebook.
I'm not sure it's so much that. I mean, if paper came out from a company like LinkedIn, and I know there's great quality content on LinkedIn because they really push their content, then I think it would make sense to me. But to me, Facebook is just more about people and relationships, and it's less about content. And at the end of the day, as much as they want to get into that space, I don't think it is really a great fit for them. Whereas I think, again, with something like LinkedIn, I think it does make some sense for them. So to me, it's not so much that it's an app that has been developed by Facebook. It's a more of an issue that, well, the community on Facebook, I don't see them as a community to be generating great content. So that's where there's a missing link for me. You know, like if Google Plus came out with an app like Paper, and I think there's great content on Google Plus, then I would be interested in it. But on Facebook, I don't know. You know, it's just a different experience, right?
Yeah. 8-Bit Steve says in chat, how about this? If Paper came out from MySpace, would you check it out then? I think that's then the answer is really no. I mean, Facebook actually has a lot of information for me. Whether or not I like the experience is a whole other story, but I can't ignore it. I can't. I get event invites from Facebook. People tag me in photos on Facebook. People message me on Facebook. I have to be there, or I feel like that I have to. MySpace is not a place that I need to go ever.
ever again. Just to catch up on the Facebook story about the mention of maybe the new design, I just checked out an article on The Verge that is mentioning the new newsfeed redesign on Facebook. It's almost like a redesign of their redesign. So I don't know if a lot of people have been receiving this new design today, but they do have an article about it that just went live 2 hours ago. So I'll keep poking around to see what that's all about.
Well, my news feed doesn't look different yet. It looks pretty news feedy, but nothing too crazy. So I guess I'm not one of the lucky ones. But that's interesting. Yeah, we'll definitely look out for that. Speaking of Facebook Paper, there is a there are some new features that have come to Facebook Paper. One of them is you've got new options to share. If you see something that you like, of course, on Facebook, you can share via text. You can share via email, or Facebook Message automatically includes a shared from paper, and then it's a customized shortener for URLs. So that would encourage people to say, oh, Facebook Paper, okay, that sounds good. Let's go ahead and download that. You've got the ability to mute sound effects, which is the app actually has pretty cool sound effects, but it notes in this TechCrunch article about the new features that, you know, if you're listening to music, you're not necessarily going to need all the beeps and whizzes and that sort of thing that comes with an app. Facebook Messenger also has, I think, great sound effects, but yeah, I don't actually want to hear them if it's going to interfere with what I might be listening to in my headphones if I'm using the app on a mobile device.
Yeah, I'm totally with you about most sounds that come within apps. I don't need to hear them ever.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting story about Findery. The Findery app just launched their iPhone app, and I had a chance to interview Katarina Fake just a few days ago for another project I was working on, and I talked to her a bit about Findery, and I hadn't used the product before, and I went onto the website because before they had an app, they basically just relied on the website, and it's a neat idea. You know, the whole concept that people are able to leave notes at different locations, so if you're traveling, you can get these really in-depth notes of maybe the history of a certain location or someone's personal story or experience. And the more I dive into Findery, the more I really like it. And we know that Katarina has a couple of great hits under her belt from Flickr and Hunch, of course. So I think this one, it seems to be growing kind of slowly and organically as well. So good luck to them as they launch their app for the first time.
Yeah, in fact, I downloaded it this morning and I had kind of forgotten about Findery. It used to be called Pinwheel, I believe.
Yes, of course.
And yeah, they had a web presence for a couple of years, but no app. So I'm going ahead and saying, all right, you can leave notes in places around the world and gather notes into note maps. I would love to get started. Yes, find my current location. All right, I'm in Petaluma. It's kind of got a nice little 61 Fahrenheit here, so it knows where I am. And now, all right, well, what do I want to do? How about some places to shop here? And I'm looking at an area that I don't know where this is, actually. I guess this, well, that's definitely not in Petaluma. I don't know where that is. Oh, I see. I'm in an explore section. I'm discovering other places here. So this is kind of neat. So I guess, in a way, Amber, it's not so different than something like Trippy, where it's all about the idea that you're going to go to a new place and you want some good advice, good tips, good photos from people who have been there before, who have left little breadcrumbs for you. And in a way, that's not so different than Foursquare either, but this app certainly looks different than anything I've seen before. Oh, libraries for library lovers, that's kind of fun. So if I go ahead and say, yeah, I like this subject, I would like to follow the subject now, let's do it later, I can follow the notes that have been left worldwide on a variety of libraries. Ooh, that's very cool. Hey, I was just in Florida. I wish I knew about the library in Sebastian, where my friend here apparently has been working since 1991 and has some good tips about it.
Yeah, these are different type of tips, right? I mean, it's a very personal experience, I find, on Findery. It's one of those things where I think you would almost follow your own community of people on Findery, and you would find stuff that you may not see on Yelp, you may not see on some other websites out there. So it just seems to be a different type of content, and that's where I think it gets kind of interesting. I looked up Austin, Texas just for fun, and I found one individual who was writing stories about a particular park and the history of that park and going into great detail about the houses around that park. So I think we're not going to find that information anywhere else. You know, you're not going to go on Wikipedia and get such in-depth information about a tiny little local park somewhere, but an individual who lives there, of course, is able to share that. So it seems very personal, and that's where I think it has a bit of an edge on some of the other tools out there. But the biggest issue I think they have right now is just the number of members and community users who are on board and who are using it on a regular basis. But I think the app should help a lot with that, because there's not as much content as there could be. But based on what Katarina had said in her interview, she loves to grow communities, and she said slowly and organically. Like, she's never in a rush to grow them, and which is why they waited to come out with the app.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun to watch this one really expand.
I'm just looking at the Findery Twit Cottage entry, which was left by somebody who doesn't work here, Mantel. And this is neat. Yeah, you know, there's information. It looks like it's all accurate. And I guess you're right, Amber. There's more to it than just, oh, I'm going on a trip. You know, what are the fun things that I can see when I'm on this trip? But more the backstory behind a library or a park or or a road. And of course, then I can create my own. And that's the best part, because I don't know, I'm full of useless information about little places that I would love to share with other people. And it's I've got to spend a little bit more time with it, because, again, it just came out and I'm looking at it for the first time, but it's very nice. And it's free, too. So, and it is just on iOS, I know, for now, but I believe that the company said that they're working on other platforms as well.
Cool. So we also have an email from David Bell, who says, I volunteer with a nonprofit boating safety website that has a small but focused group of members. We have a static WordPress website, but are looking for a dynamic way to have our members communicate with us through photos, web links, and updates. Any suggestions on what we should do? Sarah, I do have a couple suggestions if you want me to go first.
Yes, please do.
That works for you. Now, I just quickly did a bit of a search as far as plugins on WordPress to build communities, and one that I found that I think is relatively popular, and if anyone who's listening has any experience using it, please let us know. It's called BuddyPress, and it has a good reputation, at least online from what I've seen, and it's a great place to be able to launch a community within your WordPress site. Again, just a pretty simple plugin, so you may want to give that a try. Another thing, too, I wanted to mention, you know, even though it's a good idea to do this within your own website, maybe you could also rely on another tool. And I think Google Plus Communities is really a strong tool. I just read recently that someone had said that's probably the best part about Google Plus is the communities tool, how people have leveraged that to be able to share content and really grow communities. So you may want to do something even outside of the WordPress environment. I know it's hard to get people to start using Google Plus, but again, the communities tool is actually pretty neat. So those would be my two recommendations.
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind is Facebook page, but that does work well also for certain communities. But Amber, I think that if they're already using a WordPress site and feel that it's just a little too static, BuddyPress sounds like a great idea. I mean, at least give it a try and see if you can expand on your existing infrastructure before you try to rebuild somewhere else. But Google Plus as well, particularly for community, you know, on Know How, which is another show on our network that is very how-to, and, you know, it's all about building and kind of crowdsourced answers for that. They have a thriving community on Google Plus and have always said it just seems like the best place to build something like that, because when you have a focused topic and you encourage people to chime in and share pictures and text and that sort of thing, that it's a really, yeah, there you go. There's our know-how page. It's a great solution. And it, you know, Google Plus looks beautiful. If you've got a community, you can give that a try too, if for whatever reason WordPress doesn't seem to be the right solution.
Yeah, and Sarah, think about all you can do in Google Plus, right? I mean, I know we've gone on about this before, but once you have a community there, I mean, you have the option to do a live hangout. You could do a live video TV show, essentially. You also have the ability to nicely integrate photos and videos. So there's so much more. It's such a robust platform. So I think you're right. I mean, maybe the first step is to do it within WordPress, but if you don't want to do that and you can go outside and that would work for you, I think the communities option is a really good one.
I do as well. So hopefully, David, we've given you some options. Do let us know. We would love to know which solution ended up working best for you. And if you're still looking, we'll continue to keep helping. So let us know either way. We love hearing from all of you, not just David. Do write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. If you have questions about anything that we've covered or suggestions for great services or communities or anything really social that you'd like us to cover, that we welcome all feedback and ideas. You can also leave us a voicemail. We don't get a lot of voicemails, and I don't know why you're all so very shy, but if you would like to leave us a voice version of feedback, you can do so at 2626-SOCIAL. I found that on Google Voice, by the way, 2626-SOCIAL. I thought I was very brilliant. Or, of course, you can record a video, upload it somewhere, and send us the link. Okay, Amber, I'm excited for your Ratter Fad because I know it has to do with teeth. And I like teeth a lot. But first, let's take a moment to thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Now, I'm just going to explain what 99 Designs does, and then I'm going to show you what somebody did with 99 Designs, which is very, very exciting because it's so nice to get user cases. So let's say that you are looking for a great logo for a project. You know, you're building a new website, or you need some sort of a banner or a T-shirt, or you put a logo on a mug. I mean, whatever it might be, if it's design focused, 99 Designs is the place to go to get a great design from a professional. If you're not a professional like me, then you know that it just isn't worth trying to do yourself. You want somebody who knows what they're doing to build you a beautiful design. 99 Designs is the world's largest graphic design marketplace. They make it easy to get the design that you love. So what you do is you go to the website, you tell them what you're looking for. You describe it the best you can. You pick a price package that works for you, and then designers from around the world start submitting designs, which is very exciting because you can be like, oh my gosh, look, that they imagine it in a way that my imagination didn't even. Maybe that's the direction I'd like to go in, or yeah, that color palette doesn't really work for me. You can give them some feedback, and then within a week or so, you've got all these designs, you pick your favorites, and that's the design that you pay for. So it's a great way to kind of get your pick of all these beautiful designs and pick the one that is the best, rather than just having one and saying, I think it's good enough. I don't know. It really sort of expands what all of your options are. They have 270,000 designers. There's really no limit to what you can get designed. You can boost your brand's visibility with a car wrap design. I mean, you can never ignore those cars on the freeway. You're always looking at the logo. Projects start at just $199, and your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. If you go to 99designs, that's 99designs.com/social hour, you get a $99 power pack of services for free. Basically gives you more attention. You get featured in 99designs marketplace, so a lot more people know about your project and want to be involved. And you, as the recipient of a great design, just end up getting more options. So this is a really, really great $99 pack of services, completely free if you go to 99designs/social hour. And real quick, I do want to show that, Amber, remember when you were in our studio? Gosh, it was like a year and a half ago now. It was the only social hour that you've ever done sitting next to me. We had a guest. His name was Eric, and he was telling us about a documentary that he was putting together.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was actually a feature film. I don't want to misspeak. But, yeah, he told us about it, and we said, that's great. Please keep us informed. And he said, well, I ended up using 99 Designs to put together our album art for the movie. And he said he had a great experience. He said they're a wonderful service. I couldn't recommend them enough. And here is that poster. So he had, the movie's called Toy Soldiers. It's kind of fun. In the 80s, there was sex, drug, rock and roll, and the loss of innocence. The Toy Soldiers. You got some roller skates there, and ooh, looks sort of ominous. Looks like there's something to this movie. This is something that 99 Designs put together, and he's really, really happy. So just goes to show you, you got some really, really talented people out there.
And Sarah, I should also tell you, too, that I am coming back to San Francisco. I just got a speaking event there, so I'll be back. And hopefully I can come up to the studio on July 2nd if you're around. But we'll coordinate that offline. So just before
I hope so. I hope it works out. I won't be in Iceland at that time, I promise. Good. If I go, I will make sure that I don't go while you're here. All right, Amber, let's get to your rad or fad this week.
Okay, I was super excited to see this because, I don't know, Sarah, this is pretty geeky and I think perfect for our audience. Oral-B has launched a digital toothbrush that they say is kind of like a Fitbit for your mouth.
Wow.
It's hard for me to say that without laughing. And it says it's bringing biometrics into the bathroom with the world's first smartphone-connected toothbrush. And the idea is it's going to give you personalized information to help you improve how you brush your teeth because it is tracking all of the motions that you're making and it's going to analyze them and you'll be able to see all the bells and whistles and tips for improvement. So it has an app that goes along with it, of course. And the Apple display, the brushing progress in real time, if you're into that. And as far as a price, it's not cheap, Sarah. It will be coming out at about $330.
Whoa, that is a little steep.
At that price point.
I was sort of all in until it was over $300. I really, teeth are very important to me. Not only my own, but I want everyone to, you know, to take care of their teeth.
Of course.
And I think this is, you know, if you sort of gamify the idea of good oral health, it makes it a little bit more fun, you know, if you're hoping to, just like taking a certain amount of steps in a day, if you know that you should be brushing for a certain period of time or make sure that you know, hit your molars or that sort of thing. I like the idea of this. So it's a great concept, but I don't know how many people are going to buy this for $330. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I think you're exactly right. I mean, if you buy a regular toothbrush, I just bought some new toothbrushes. I'm sure you can get two for $4. So at this price point, you think, you know what? I think I can actually learn how to brush my teeth on my own without spending hundreds of dollars. If they get the price point down, if they do something I think that is a little more kid-friendly, because it is very difficult to get kids to brush their teeth, then if they gamify that experience maybe for a younger generation and they have something kind of fun for them, that could be interesting. But at the end of the day, I think they just sort of jumped on the whole Fitbit fad. It feels a little forced to me, as much as, like you, I do care about dental hygiene. It's important for all of us.
It is important for all of us, but, you know, when you can buy a toothbrush for $5 or, you know, I mean, gosh, even a visit to the dentist is $330 it's a great concept. We'll probably see something like this come down in price. Oral-B at least can say that they were first as the first wearable toothbrush gadget thingy, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're going to sell a lot of these.
Yeah, I think it could be a bit of a struggle for them, but nonetheless, good effort for trying. But I do think that you're going to get the fad title on this episode of The Social Hour.
Yeah,
because it's just too expensive. It's one of those things that I think it needs a few tweaks here and there.
Yeah, it's like you know, any startup that has a great idea but fails. They were just too early. They were just a little ahead of the game. So not a bad idea, just we're not ready for it.
Not ready for it right now.
Not ready yet.
And please, if anyone has any recommendations for Rad or Fad, I can always find stuff. But of course, we love hearing from all of our listeners and viewers as well.
Absolutely. Well, Amber, what do you have going on the rest of the show floor now that we're wrapping the show up and you're going to be out and about again?
I know. Well, the conference is wrapping up today, so that's the good news. So not too much. I can relax after. I think we did 35 interviews, so it's been busy.
Oh, my gosh. You have a very good attitude, considering that you've been talking for a really long time.
It's good. It's nice to talk to you. I have guys, like, blocking people from coming over because everybody thinks I'm just sitting here on my computer surfing the web. But it's good
surfing the web, talking to it.
Yeah, talking to my computer by myself.
Stranger things have happened. I do that all the time at home. All right, well, that does it for this episode of The Social Hour. Amber, thanks so much for figuring out how to have a great connection from the show floor. It's kind of fun to see you out and about. And what's coming up with you in the next week before we do the show again?
Not too much, but I will be down in Florida for March break, and I'll be doing the show from down there. So,
excellent.
Always moving around, and I'm going to try to get some good guests coming up over the next few episodes. So any suggestions, let us know. We can try to get them back on, and maybe some past guests we've had that have been good, too.
Yes, absolutely. And we still need to get Nick Bilton back on, because we had so many Skype issues with him that one day, and I want to talk to him about everything Twitter.
I do. We're going to get him back on when he's settled at home with a good internet connection.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, thanks to everybody for watching and listening this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, we are on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, if you want to watch us live. Otherwise, of course, you can go to twit.tv/TSH. Follow along with all of our archived episodes there. Subscribe to the show so you don't even have to think about when new episodes come out. They're just delivered to you. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.